From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 22nd day of October 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. The folks from Risk Pulse are not available this afternoon, so we're going to move things around just a bit, and we'll bring you Dan O'Brien today rather than tomorrow. He's from our energy segment at K-State University. We'll also talk about the agricultural cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons, and we'll hear from Todd Hubbs too today. He's got some thoughts about the ethanol market and the exports of corn and what all that means for the support price for that commodity. We'll do all of that right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Hey, Kurt, thanks for being with us today.
We are quite welcome, Ty. Glad to be here.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about the marketplace going through this week as we have some sunshine. We should have combines rolling pretty good. We'll need to know what kind of conditions they had last week and how far along we think we are in those USDA reports and whether this market is far enough along to find some relief from the pressure that came in last week as producers began to harvest in earnest.
Yeah, it kind of feels like we found the upper end of the trading range last week with the slowdown demand and harvest resuming here. This afternoon's conditions report for corn is expected to be about 67% good to excellent versus 68% last week. Harvested 51% versus 39%. Bean-wise, conditions 65% good to excellent versus 66% last week. Conditions-wise, it might be more of a quality issue in some areas that's received some extreme moisture. Harvest, bean harvest, pretty aggressive, 52% complete versus 38% last week. When you look at the state breakdowns, I think most of the eyes are going to be on Iowa, particularly corn. Last week, they only had 17% of the corn crop out, and they were about 7% behind the average. Also, to Minnesota was 18%, but their harvest activity is only about 20% average. Bean-wise, I was 19% complete versus 51% on the average. So they'll watch Iowa. Then Minnesota was 38 versus 69. So those will be the two states to watch. Visiting with producers, beans are cutting in much, much better. This frost freeze event we had has helped the process here of running the beans fairly quickly through the combine in fairly good conditions. Quality, like I mentioned, still the issue, particularly in Iowa and portions of Minnesota. So we'll see what those updates show here this afternoon. Technical-wise, we kind of rolled over. We're searching for about a four-week cycle low. Today, we got close to some support areas. March corn 377 is basically about 38% back down to the September low. And bean-wise, January beans 866 and a quarter is about halfway back down to their September low. We got fairly close to those numbers. If you're a technician, we did make a new low and close higher today. That would be considered a hook reversal to the upside. It's positive, but it's not bullish just yet. We need to see some follow-through and kind of make sure we hold today's lows. The overall momentum indicators are still down here for just a little while, so technically here by midweek, we should hopefully find some support to work off of.
Are you very much worried about demand for corn at all, or does it seem to be robust enough to you?
Well, I don't want to jinx it. I say demand is good. We're going to go higher. We'll go down. But, no, overall demand, we've been talking about this for about the last year on the world and the domestic side of it's fairly good. Worldwide, China has just been continuing to move grain out of their reserves. I think they moved almost 90 million metric tons of corn out of their reserve here ever since last spring. So they're using it up. So the question is, if they plant more bean acres, it costs corn. So, corn demand strong, especially if they push this ethanol issue and continue to follow through building ethanol plants. Domestic-wise, Jimmy Crimey, we've got bases starting to firm up, particularly going into mid-December here, as far as, you know, end users are a little concerned about getting corn for mid-December. Ideas are the ending stocks may actually go back down and see a 1.7 instead of a 1.8 on it. So we'll see how it unfolds as we move forward here. But corn seems to have the most footing in it. We're not going to go to $5 by all means right away here, but, you know, it's got some legs under it, Todd.
You know, last Friday, USDA, I think, released some numbers for cattle on feed. Can you maybe go back and catch those for me, take a look at them, and then give me some insight as to what happened in the marketplace because of that and what you think they might mean in the broader picture and grand scheme of what's been happening in that marketplace?
Well, it was bearish, but yeah, it was bullish because we did not quite get the numbers they were looking for. On feed, they were looking for about 106. You know, those numbers came in at 105 placed. You know, they were looking about 100% when they placed 95%. And marketing, as expected, 97 came in 96. What this says is, you know, we do have ample supplies, but demand is robust, and that, you know, as long as this demand holds in there, these cattle prices ought to stay firm. Cash cattle are $1.11. The board's at $1.18 on the D, so the board's carrying a premium in here on ideas that we're going to continue to see people indulge in beef. When you look at the per capita consumption, it remains robust too. The placement number is positive when you look into the spring months, and with lower placements as we move forward in through here, the meat market looks fairly good. But the big news is for the feed usage. I mean, true feed usage is strong. You know, 5% more cattle, 3% more hogs, poultry numbers are strong. So overall, true feed usage is there to absorb the supply that we're going to be dealing with going through this winter.
Okay, thanks so much.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, ag producers are feeling the trade war blowback and settling in for the long haul. Commodity prices are down, operating or expenses are trending higher, but partially a result of the tit-for-tat tariffs between the United States and its top trading partners. Many are already projecting another dip again next year, unless there's a major shift in the trade situation. Net farm income is already near 15-year lows in 2018. That according to the latest forecast from the USDA Economic Research Service. Brent Gloy, an ag economist from Purdue, predicts farm income could drop even lower in 2019. He says prices are low pretty much across the board for livestock and crops. It's hard to find many bright spots. The trade spat with China in particular shows no signs of easing anytime soon. Chinese retaliatory tariffs have weighed on the price of soybeans and other ag products for months. On that note, Western ag interests, those in California and other places, got a presidential boost last week after Mr. Trump issued a memorandum aimed at funneling more water to farmers in California's thirsty Central Valley. Also benefiting are several of the House Republicans running in competitive re-election races in the region, where water supply is a top campaign issue. Vulnerable GOP incumbents now have an ag policy win they can tout in their farm-heavy districts, including Jeff Denham and David Velladio and other California Republicans, which joined Trump for the memo signing Friday in Arizona. Denham, a House Ag Committee member, said in a statement that bolstering the valley's water supply was his number one priority. The memo sets an accelerated timeline for reviewing the environmental impact of dams and canals that pump water to the California farmland and cities. Initial biological opinions related to California's Central Valley Project will be due by January 31st, with a final joint opinion due 135 days later, a much swifter schedule than parties on the ground had expected. Let's stay with politics, but come back a little closer to home. With 2 weeks to go until the November 6 midterm elections, Democrats are defending a number of Midwestern farm states and districts and races that could give one party or the other a narrow majority in either chamber of Congress. Senate Democrats will need to hang on to seats in states like Florida, Indiana, Missouri, Montana, and North Dakota, not to mention winning new seats in red states like Texas or Tennessee to have any shot at a Senate majority. The House majority, too, could hinge in part on races in Midwestern states and farm districts elsewhere. One other item to report, two Minnesota Democrats on the House Ag Committee are leaving Congress after this term, and Republicans appear poised to flip at least one of the open seats, both in districts that voted for Mr. Trump in 2016. From politics to policy now, U.S. and Canada still have some work to do on steel tariffs. The new North American Trade Pact, the USMCA, was supported to help facilitate a separate resolution on steel and aluminum tariffs that the U.S. imposed on its northern neighbor. But discussions toward lifting the U.S. tariffs have not taken place for months, that according to a top Canadian official. The last tariff talks took place in the spring. The Trump administration proposed capping Canadian steel exports at 2017 levels and lifting tariffs on exports below that threshold, according to a steel executive. That position was seen by Ottawa as a non-starter. Meanwhile, several countries are challenging the Trump administration's tariff actions in the World Trade Organization. China, Canada, Mexico, the EU, Norway, Russia, and Turkey are among them, and they will formally request dispute panels to take up Trump's steel and aluminum duties, which were issued supposedly for national security reasons. The U.S. is also challenging the retaliatory tariffs imposed by several of those countries. And finally today, President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping are on track to meet November the 29th, the day before the G20 gathering in Argentina. It would mark the two leaders' first face-to-face in nearly a year and potentially set up renewed efforts to ease trade tensions between the superpowers. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, the price of corn is under pressure. That's no real surprise during the harvest season, but end users will need to pick up the pace if real support is ever to be found. The recent weakening of ethanol production levels, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Todd Hubbs in a report of lower net export sales, isn't a good sign for the price of corn. Neither, he says, is the narrowing ethanol plant profit margins.
While it's still strong, you know, it's sort of a pullback from the torrid pace we were setting earlier in this year.
Well, the Illinois Number Cruncher says to meet the current USDA projection, an expansion in gasoline consumption or a continuation of the growth in ethanol export levels like witnessed during the 2017-18 marketing year would be necessary. EIA projections from the most recent short-term energy outlook place 2019 ethanol production at 1.03 million barrels per day. Now that's down from the current estimate of 1.05 million barrels a day.
While we've seen sort of a pullback in ethanol use for corn, it's still at a good level, but it has been a pullback. Corn exports have been very strong, despite the negative net export sales number last week.
Outstanding sales are up 27% over this same time last year. Ethanol exports witnessed record levels in the 2017-18 marketing year, or the last one, with total exports equaling almost 1.62 billion gallons. Nearly 30% above this record total went to Brazil. Recent reports out of Brazil show ethanol stocks there up 29% over last year as sugarcane processing turned back to ethanol production. The prospects of eclipsing last year's record export total requires continued Brazilian sourcing of U.S. ethanol or increased ethanol exports to other markets. Corn used for ethanol in 2018-19 appears more likely to be closer to 2017-18 totals then, says Hubbs, at 5.601 billion bushels. The current WASDE forecast places ending stocks at 1.813 billion bushels for the 18-19 marketing year, a continuation of strong demand, but possibly at lower levels than the current USDA projections, hold promise for post-harvest prices. Still, Hubbs thinks corn prices may struggle to find strong support over the near term, without a significant change in the supply outlook. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Dan O'Brien from K-State Extension now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in the agricultural energies. Just a few moments ago, we heard from Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the U of I campus, about the very slim margins for ethanol and profits at the plants. Would you agree with that assessment, Dan?
We'd follow right along with what Todd is showing there in Illinois, and that, again, if you look at numbers from Iowa, models, we had lost by their estimate 8 cents per gallon for the average of the month of September, picking up through the 19th this month with the available price data. We're looking at about 5 cents worse down to 13 cents per gallon under. And really a lot of the, of course, there are two sides of these issues. As we see corn prices inch higher, that's working against the profitability of ethanol plants. So most corn producers are happy to see export business here in the U.S., but that as that brings price up, domestic prices for corn a little bit higher, it is working against the profitability of our domestic ethanol plants a bit.
How do you see things falling out over the next several weeks?
Well, I think that we've had some harvest delays. It'll be really interesting to see what once all throughout the Corn Belt, as we get back into the field and really, really bring in, digest, have to handle the size of this crop, what prices will do for a bit. I would not be surprised if we have a break in prices. If you're an ethanol plant operator, you're doing some risk management, some hedging on the buyer side, to protect yourself from prices going higher later, because as has been pointed out, there's some strength in overseas export demand, and this would behoove someone to if you're a corn buyer to protect yourself from prices moving higher as we move off in the spring from I guess a variety of really increasingly positive sets of news on the corn usage side.
Hey, what is capacity for ethanol production in the United States?
Well, it's over since last month, it's increased about 16.4 billion gallons a year. And the number of plants hasn't changed, but plants are coming online and have been operating. Now, I think as profitability gets challenged more and more, plants on the margin, less profitable plants may at least idle temporarily. We'll see. But by the latest Renewable Fuels Association numbers, we're at about 16.4 billion gallons per year.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
That's Dan O'Brien. He's with K-State Extension. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Now let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. Amy Sage is here from the Andersons. Amy, thanks so much for being with us. Have you been busy today?
We're pretty busy. Corn actually is really winding down. We're kind of at the tail end here of corn harvest, obviously. There's still guys finishing up, but really we've been getting mostly beans, of course, now that we're getting closer to the end of harvest with beans. Space has become tight, as we've kind of expected throughout the year, especially with difficulties getting rail movement for soybeans given the trade war. But we're moving right along. I think a majority of harvest in our area will be done by the end of this week.
Any quality issues with the soybeans?
Really, I guess we've kind of been talking about more space evaluation and handling. There has been some damage in some areas. At this point, we've been seeing a little bit of issues to the east with soybeans. As far as weather impacting out to the west, I'm sure that they're going to have some issues, but not sure the extent out there.
What's your basis expectations for this week, Amy?
Yep. So locally, I think right now we're seeing a little bit of pressure here in Champaign on both corn and beans because we're looking at rail values and space getting tight. But as we continue to wrap up harvest here, typically you'll start to see that improve once a majority of the crop is gone. Obviously, supply and demand will play into effect there. So I think that we could continue to see it struggle here for the next week, particularly in soybeans. But I would say next week will be a different story. I would think we should start to see some improvement once the crop's out.
And what are your bids for the day?
$3.32 for corn, $7.88 for soybeans, and $4.93 for wheat.
Hey, thanks, Amy.
Thank you.
That's Amy Sage. She is with the Andersons and helps us wrap up this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.